Greetings. From Stonehenge and Silbury Hill to the headwaters of the Nile, and from thence to the Great Pyramid at Giza, from the ruins at Angkor Wat to those at Chichen Itza, from the obelisk in D.C. to the melted fuel pools at Fukushima, from the outer worlds to the inner collective mind, we welcome you. This is Caravan to Midnight, the John B. Wells program. I am John B. in the left seat of the Ark Midnight, the new mothership. Behold, we are hovering over the crisis crossroads, the epicenter of the world, Dallas, Texas. Wafting along on the electromagnetic wave, as it might be, and on this particular episode of Caravan to Midnight, we welcome Robert Fletcher. Call him Bob. When you hear this man start speaking, you will be transfixed to whatever medium you happen to be using to receive this program. You really will. Did you know? He actually introduced Elton John to the American public when he worked for MCA. We won't be talking about music today, though. Something in some ways much more interesting, and yet, well, it's interesting in the way that the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. That meaning, that kind of interesting, you know? Anyway, it's funny because the very first album that I ever bought was Elton John's Tumbleweed Connection with Where To Now St. Peter on it. Thought that might be a good program for, or a good song for the program today. All right, and now it is my pleasure to bring upon the bridge of the Ark Midnight the new mothership, Mr. Bob Fletcher. Now, as we get into this, let me say at the top, he is not the sheriff. That is another Bob Fletcher. This Bob Fletcher is businessman, investigator, film producer, radio personality, author, federal witness, whistleblower, and patriot. Let me tell you a little bit about him here. As an investigator, he's concerned with the future of America, and he's doing something about it. After years of a professional business career, Bob became involved with the U.S. government top-secret covert arms sales without even knowing it. It's not the first time that that's happened, I am sure. In a simple business merger, Bob merged his toy manufacturing company with a company that imported watches, but exported weapons for the U.S. government and the top-secret intelligence services. That company was called Vista USA, Inc., and was a covert operational front for U.S. arms sales and covert mercenary training. Eventually, the owner, Gary Best, attempted to recruit Fletcher into the business of arms sales, and Fletcher refused to become involved. Later, he became a witness in the Iran-Contra mess and then became an investigator, assisting with several House and Senate investigations. Bob discovered Gary Best was also most likely involved with the Oklahoma City bombing in 1994, and since then, he's been chasing bad guys in the government, producing some of the world's best exposés. Bob's reports on DVD and VHS. Yeah, VHS players, they're still out there. They're seen all over the world. After completing a report for Sonny Bono, not to be confused with Bono, that's U2, that's a different guy. We're talking about Sonny and Cher. Sonny Bono, which involved CIA and the drug connection leading back to top U.S. government officials, a tragic death took place. Sonny had decided to do a major congressional investigation into Bob's report. Sonny's offices called Bob and confirmed the planned investigations. 10 days later, Sonny was found dead, as in murdered, on the ski slope. So the tree, it appears, didn't do it. Bob's latest DVD is the report on Congressman Sonny Bono's murder, titled Destiny Denied. Wow. Bob Fletcher, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here. Thanks for making the time.
Hi, John. Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure. Some of the work I have been doing is not a pleasure, but nonetheless, I certainly have been able to open up a lot of eyes to the fact and the reality that corruption in our government is so profuse at this point in time. It's like a 20-foot snowball rolling down a hill, and you don't want to step in front of it at this point in time. We should have stopped it when it was just a snowball. And it's too late, I'm afraid, at this time.
Well, you cut to the chase part of my movie, which is there any saving this thing? Or is the corruption just so deeply embedded, just so deeply ingrained in the whole system that the whole apparatus has to be torn down and then rebuilt?
Well, unfortunately, I'm afraid we don't have time to do that. But to answer your question, yes, it's entirely too far over the hill, so to speak. What they refer to as a secret government's been underway for years, going way, way back. And I think they really put the cap on it when they blew President Kennedy's brains out in front of everybody. That was like almost like the flag coming down at the Indianapolis Raceway saying, start your engines, take off. And that's what they've done from that point forward.
That's once been my feeling, too.
And once they were able to get away with that, they could almost, they pat each other on the back, and they said, we can do anything we want because we've accomplished that unbelievable event. And, of course, convinced people that one screwball did it, and when, in fact, it was totally a central a CIA operation mixed with literally the Vice President Johnson and even Nixon, directly involved in one manner or another, and of course the intelligence community at that time as well. It was actually a military or an intelligence operation coup in the United States of America. But we don't want to get into all of that. That's a whole separate story, I guess.
You know, typically, Baba, in one of these interviews, it's just structured, and you go by the questions on the sheet, and, you know, a lot of people do that. But I don't want to cut to the end of the story here, but if it really is too far gone, what do we do? Is it like Slim Pickens on the A-bomb and Dr. Strangelove, just fan that thing like you're riding a bull and just ride it on down until it sprouts into a mushroom? I mean, is that what we do now? Is there any stopping it? Do we get anything out of this other than knowing that we've been in the fight to try and save it, but it's a sinking ship? Forget about it. I mean, where are we here?
Well, it's very depressing. When I got into it, first off, I was not politically oriented when I was popped into the middle of these this intelligence operation and the fact that they're supplying weapons. And in exchange for narcotics, which were coming into the United States and actually being offloaded out of C-130 aircraft at our military bases and off at the Homestead Air Force Base and bases in Texas, et cetera, and utilizing Panama, Manuel Noriega's Panama as exchange points and things like that. And then later on we watched artificial war attacked against Manuel Noriega by Bush, and all that was a business operation between the two of them that had gone bad. But when I got into mine, originally it just sort of scratched the surface, my exposure to it, where I witnessed them calling on the telephone and selling helicopters and supplying Hellfire missiles to these wars that we've been carrying out all over the world for so many years, these little intelligence wars. And when I found out how they did it, the mechanics of it, and how it's like an ongoing operation, and this is like 20 years almost. It was 1985, 20 years after the Vietnam War, and it was the same guys that ran the Vietnam War and had stolen millions and millions of dollars of weapons going into Vietnam. They were making the drug deals back then, swapping out the drugs, even including sewing packages of narcotics into the body cavities of our returning soldiers as part of their transportation of narcotics back during the Air America business during the Vietnam War. And these are the same guys that came later, we're doing all the other small things, the things in Angola, in Africa, in Azerbaijan, Russia, And so all these little wars are all over the place that are actually CIA, Central Intelligence Operations, and all of them being mixed like 50-50, stamped as what might be legitimate Central Intelligence Operations, but then the other half is to generate unbelievable profit and income for the people that are actually involved with it. If you take weapons, let's say $10 million worth of weapons into Vietnam, $5 million worth of them would disappear before they even reached Vietnam, and they were put in storage in Panama to be picked up later to be sold on another operation down the road. And when they sold it, almost all of these now were different narcotics operations where they would supply $10 million worth of weapons. They would get $40 million worth of narcotics, put it on the airplanes that delivered the weapons, fly them back to the United States, and deliver them into the blood vessels of our children here in the United States. And it was being done by the Central Intelligence and those operations. And at the highest level at the White House, they would simply, in some cases, they were directly involved with it, the presidents of the United States. And in some cases, they simply said, you know, here's my account number in Geneva, where's my money, and how much did we make, and what do we have to do next month? And it blew me away, because when I got in, I became a federal witness in the Iran-Contra event. There was a $24 million racketeering lawsuit that I became a sworn witness in, done by the Christic Institute, and that was against the same people that were involved with the Contra mess, but it had been filed 6 months before the Contra mess hit the fan. And it was the same people already had been subpoenaed for that legal action. And then from there, I myself became a guy that they would call when they were, Senator Kerry was doing his CIA drug inquiries, or they were doing the inquiry in 1989 about the October surprise of 1980, which was the theft of the election, actually, with Reagan and Bush running against Jimmy Carter. I was involved with that. But I would be called, and they would say, Bob, do you have anything connected to this guy and that guy and this person and that? And I would say, well, yeah, I do. I got like 14 files. And they would say, can you get it to us? And I would, the next thing I know, I was involved with another inquiry. And I've been involved with as many as 8 or 10 major congressional investigations. And it's always two guys from the left hand mixed with three guys from the right hand, but they're all going right on up to the White House. And that's how outrageous it is. And when I say White House, I'm talking Central Intelligence, National Security Agency, and all those guys that have the ability to get into our pockets and then just stamp.
Sorry, errant.
That's it. Uh-oh, crazy personal line. Anyhow, yeah. And they can stamp it top secret, and you can't go anyplace. You can't, I mean, my toy factory was classified as a covert secret operation. I manufactured furry little toys for children. They classified the toy factory. End of story. And they have done it so profusely, and they have it down to such an ongoing operation that it's mind-boggling. But when I say we don't have time, we don't have time for one reason, because they have secured total control of everything. There is no way to pull them out from the roots any longer. The roots have spread in every direction. But the second reason is because of my recent investigations, trying to find out where all the money had gone to, huge amounts of money for the last 10, 20, 30 years, and I finally discovered where that's gone. And that's what my newest inquiry is about.
Good grief. You know, when we got together here, I was thinking, this is going to be interesting, given your history. But we're going to eventually get into talking about off-planet stuff.
Correct. Correct. When we can we get into the finite points of that. If there's any questions you have at all, there's a million questions typically. And again, just the front end of how I got into this mess unto itself is an amazing story. And then, like I said, it ended up opening up the door, you know, just because of what I saw, who I learned, what they were doing, you know, and how it took place, and the fact that it's just totally entrenched. It's been ongoing. General corruption in government in the United States has been ongoing and growing for 50, 60, 70 years. And that's what exactly happened with Sonny Bono when he became a congressional representative. And his exposure to what was going on up there in Washington freaked him out. He couldn't believe it. He had been a mayor in Los Angeles, California area, in one of the towns there, and then had become, of course, the congressional representative just because of his personality and the fact that he was aggressive and active, and he couldn't be bought off. He couldn't be paid off, and he was a good American. He was just an all-American kind of kid that had been successful in music. And when he went to Washington, it blew him away. And he was first involved with the heartbreaker, so to speak, and that was the Waco events in Texas where they burned the church and killed all the children and all of that with the over-aggressive criminal activity of the government closing down a guy that really was not a big deal. No way they should have killed this guy. And they went and they burned the church down in Waco. And he was involved with the investigations. And Sonny, God bless him, actually broke down in tears and cried when he saw the movies and watched the testimony of all the children that were burned to death in this Waco church thing. And he saw that as being like the pinnacle of government corruption. And then when a few other people, including myself, supplied him with the report that I supplied him with, which is, by the way, is available at our website. It's called Central Intelligence Drugs and the CIA. That particular inquiry is almost the whole report that I gave to Sonny. And when Sonny realized how deep it was, it destroyed him. And then he went. We worked for about 6 or 8 months. He finally put together a congressional investigation that was to open up about the 15th of January at the end of the Christmas holidays for the Congress. And they killed him 10 days before that on the ski slopes and murdered him so that would not get off the ground. The investigation could not be started in Washington because it led right into the White House and into presidents and vice presidents of the United States, connecting drugs, murder, assassination, and the overthrows of government as a regular business operation in the United States Capitol.
Well, you know, Obama said he's pretty good at killing people. It seems like the whole bloody government is pretty good at killing people.
It's terrible because, you know, they refer to him as mechanics. They call a mechanic to handle the removal or the sanctioning of a person, and they just get the phone call. They don't have to talk about it. They just say, "Hey, we're going to have so and so drop by and give you the name of somebody that has to be taken care of." And they say, "Is there anything special that has to be done?" And they just say, "No, he's got to be eliminated," and that's the end of it. And nobody even knows who, what, when, and where, one end or the other, and when it's going to happen. And within 30 days, somebody will have a plane accident, a plane will blow up, they'll get shot, they'll have a heart attack, they'll have a brain tumor, it's unbelievable. And I had ended up, for the period of time from the 80s up through 2000, let's say, I had developed friends at extraordinary high levels. Some of them were former agents, and some of them are people that literally had been working with, for example, the director of Bill Casey for several years, who headed up the CIA, and actually so close that it was one of the persons that wrote his speeches for him, you know, and close enough to me that I would simply call and they would call me, and I had senators and congressmen calling me on a regular basis for that period of time to find out information about A, B, or C, whatever it was, that fit their own political needs, you know, and to find, by the way, I have to say this, some of the people I worked with I certainly wouldn't classify as good people, but for one reason or another, I carried out certain informational deliveries of information to them because it benefited myself in one way or another also. And what I mean by that is it maybe opened another door for information. So I wasn't getting stuff like a newspaper reporter will interview some person third hand or something like that. Everything I had was about as one-to-one as you could possibly get for the last 25 years. And I have to say this, the investigation I got into recently started it about 3 years ago. It led me into a total different direction than I ever would have believed. I originally started looking for trillions with a T of dollars that were disappearing out of budgets. 2.3 trillion vanished, according to out of the mouth of Donald Rumsfeld, who was in charge of the Defense Department. He spoke before a congressional inquiry and said they lost 2.3 trillion in the last few years.
Right.
I believe he was talking actually over a period of about 10 years. But when you're talking trillions of dollars, that's a whole different ballgame. Now, I watched for years while these people stole multi-millions of dollars, some of them just to build a new place for themselves in Tahiti. But that was small bucks. When you get into the billions and the trillions, and then you find out that the gold of Fort Knox is all gone, that the gold is gone from Fort Knox, and we have five countries that had gold in it and came forward and wanted to have some of their gold back here in 2008, that period of time when all the banks were crashing worldwide, and Germany and a few other countries came forward and said, we need a couple tons of our gold. We have 1,000 tons of gold on deposit in Fort Knox. We need it. And they told them to come back in 2020. Nobody got their gold. They did end up after a year or two, about 2014, they did get a little bit of their gold. A couple of them did, you know. But when I say it's all gone, I'm probably saying 98% of it's gone. Where does it go? That was my question. Where would trillions of dollars in misdirected funds at the Defense Department, where would it go? Now, we have multi-billions in all kinds of top-secret operations that they actually tell us out in front that they had $6 billion into something or $8 billion, and then they say, but that's top secret. So nobody finds out. Nobody, and even in the Senate and the Congress, because very few members of the Senate and the Congress have top-secret clearances. So they can't even find out. You know, everybody assumes, oh, the Congress knows. No, they don't know. It's a very small group that would know where this stuff went. And so when I got into farther, I looked into it. I found out that the Federal Reserve claimed they misplaced about $9 trillion.
Jeez, that all?
And the point is, they're very lackadaisical. The lady who was testifying about it, she said, "Oh well, yeah, we do have to kind of look into that." She says it's sort of off the books. We're not positive of this. We think it all went to foreign banks, but we're not sure what banks it might have been that got that money. So she's kind of, sort of like lackadaisical, $9 trillion. Yeah, we probably look into that next month. And when you start adding it up, it got outrageous. And I couldn't figure out what in God's name was happening with the money. And I could usually, you could track a lot of it. You could see a couple million here, a couple million there, and then, oh, this, you know, these guys have posted huge incomes during their congressional terms, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they had one example. We had a guy a while back, a CIA guy that was one of the fellows that was charged with fraud out of the CIA. His salary was about $65,000 a year as an agent. He had a $14.5 million ranch in Virginia, you know, and horses that were worth $250,000 each that ran around in the pastures of that particular ranch. You know, so where did it go? Well, he had gotten caught supplying weapons under the table that had been stolen and misappropriated and what have you. These guys, the numbers of these people doing that is mind-boggling. Now, his name was Edwin Wilson. He got caught many years ago for doing this, and he got a little bit of trouble, so to speak, but not much. What happened to Oliver North? He was right in the middle of the Iran-Contra stuff, back and forth, and I had gotten Oliver North's personal emails and handwritten notes that had been never seen by the congressional people doing the inquiry. And I hand-delivered them, unredacted, not blacked out, to the chief counsel for the House Foreign Affairs Committee, who was a friend of mine. I handed it to him, and I thought he was going to pass out sitting at his desk. He looked at it, and he said, "How did you ever get these documents? We never saw this." And I said, "Let me show you the good ones." His personal handwritten note out of his handwritten little 3-inch squared notebook he carried in his pocket that says, "Supply aircraft to pick up 1,500 kilos of MASH." Oliver North's handwritten notes. And when you have people, and I had, by the way, I had their transfers of funds, multi-millions of dollars, where they went to, who got them, the bank account numbers, the date that was transferred, and even accounting, including direct transfers from the United States government into drug operations in Miami, Florida, including the bank accounts and the signatures and the receipts of the money. That's what I supplied to the chief counsel on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Now, that paperwork is out and around a bit, finally now, but this was in 1987 when I believe I supplied that to him. So the question, and by the way, that all of that material is in the drugs and the CIA report that's available to anybody that wants it, and also Sonny Bono's investigation on his murder. That's all available on my website. You can get it yourself and take it and watch it, and it'll make you sick. And the people out here working like slaves, paying their income tax to supply billions and millions of dollars for these people that are stealing like by the truckloads out the back door in Washington.
Yep.
And it's been going on so long that you almost might as well just make your check, your income tax payments, make them out directly to congressional people. That's how outrageous it is. And of course, these intelligence people, so they have everything, and you have nothing. I mean, what I mean by that is you have no ability. Anybody in the United States, average citizen, has no ability to look at anything as far as where the money went. The budgets are outrageous. And they, by the way, they approve these bills and these budgets that would have taken you 6 months to read. And they actually claim they've read it all, their people have read it all, and they sign off on these bills and start taking more money out of our pockets every single month that they can get anything together. And now we have a president that simply does executive orders and says it's all legal. And what people don't understand, most people don't know this, but an executive order written by the president, if it is not objected to formally on the floor of the Congress and the Senate and questioned and put on hold due to, quote-unquote, a legitimate inquiry, they will become law, and I believe it's like a year or 18 months, something like that. That's what it used to be. It may even be 6 months now. But it becomes, the executive orders actually become law, the same as your congressman had written and voted on it, in only a few months down the road. So if they don't genuinely complain and put a stop on it, it will become law. And so what we have is total dictatorial at this point in time in our United States government. And they keep you occupied with garbage, you know, on TV. They spent this last 2 weeks, they spent one half of the ABC, CBS, and CNN news was relative to how soft the footballs were at the stadium at the last major football game.
Oh, sure.
And while they were doing that, 35 volcanoes were exploding around the world. Did you know that?
I did not. No.
35 volcanoes.
I'm all over the news services all the time, Bob.
That's right.
I didn't see anything about it.
That's right. And the problem is, you got to end up doing, very specific inquiries into different things. And otherwise, you can't. I unfortunately, this became full time with me for the last 20 years. And I get a heads up from things that sometimes ahead of the circle. Ahead of the curve, so to speak. I testified in 1995 before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and one of them tried to make a fool of me, ask me about a ridiculous statement I had made to Associated Press that, in fact, we had and have had for many years weather control mechanisms. And he thought the senator that asked me that brought it up. I wasn't there to talk about that, but he brought it up and he said, "What is this? What did you mean when you said that we have weather control mechanisms to use it as a weapon of war?" And the bottom line was, we did, and we do, and we had even used it during the Vietnam War. And I had everything. I had all the documentation. I had I got the patents on the equipment, who owned it, et cetera, et cetera. That a little while later, it became, people were talking about the HARP installation up in Alaska.
Yeah.
And that's only part of the weather control. That's one part of it, the huge array of antennas in Alaska. But I was the first person that brought it out generally in public. I didn't even mean to. It was unintentionally brought up by one of the senators, but they thought it was funny. And I said, "Hey, you need to look at Senator Pell, Pell, a couple of years earlier. He did an entire story himself on the fact that we now could control the weather, and I had the United States Air Force documentation on it and the fact that it had been classified top secret, et cetera." And I simply told him, I said, "You guys just don't know. I know you think that that's funny, you brought it out, but you guys just don't even know what's going on." I said, "I'm a toy manufacturer turned into an investigator. If you want to know what's happening at the secret level," and this was in 1995, I said, "you want to know what's happening, get a hold of me and I'll tell you, and I'll also show you some of the toys that I used to make." I said, "You guys ought to be toy manufacturers." It's just mind-boggling. In terms of, by the way, weather control at this point in time, as a weapon, Russia and the Red Chinese have such a huge operation, and if I'm not mistaken, this is off the top of my head, but it's going to be pretty accurate, the Chinese have 3,600 people working on that operation of their own in China in terms of weather control. But, of course, that only goes whatever. That's limited in what can be done and where it can be done and what have you. But it's totally electronic signals between satellites and base operations and aircraft in the air. And it's this basic thing of superheating the ionosphere and superheating areas of the water that will generate things like hurricanes and tornadoes, and then they can guide them with high and low pressure variations and things of that sort.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, but are you, you know, Bob, nobody can make this stuff up, but I'm just compelled to ask you, are you pretty sure this is the straight stuff? They can be moved around, they can do whatever they want?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, are these chemtrails? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah,
I don't want to ask you something.
Go ahead, ask about the chemtrails.
Well, I'm just saying, are the chemtrails part of this? You know, I had an idea the other day. I may not be the only person who's ever had this idea, but I thought, metallic particles in the air. I wonder if they're trying to turn the whole Earth into an antenna so they can talk to stuff off planet.
I don't know. You're getting whatever. Maybe I have to say that. I'm not going to say no.
Yeah, sure,
like that.
Maybe.
But the points in terms of particulate matter being put into the atmosphere, in terms of the weather control, there's a whole little group of methods, all right, and things that overlap. But the concept of putting specific particles in the air and then utilizing those as amplifiers by which you can superheat the ionosphere and the water beneath a given area, a given point in the ionosphere. That all you're doing there is artificially creating the condition under which all storms are created. That's all you're doing. That's what they are doing with it, okay? And that is to create low and high pressures. And, of course, if you have a slight storm underway someplace, you can multiply it, obviously, by increasing the temperature and causing the weather, the air to come up, rise into the ionosphere, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, and the movement is done the same way. It'll be drawn to a low-pressure area, and they can move it and manipulate it. And they actually did what was previously the old-fashioned chemical seeding, which has nothing to do with the electronics that they're doing now. The electronics is now the deal, the microwave superheating of the ionosphere. And I'll just step away from it at that point. The chemtrails could be a multitude of other experimental things that are going on. And in some of them, they are nothing at all, and they are an exaggerated situation by the public. But in general, they are doing that for specific reasons, yes. Now,
I wonder if they can superheat us. You know what I mean?
If we inhale
enough of these particles, maybe they can superheat us and just... We literally, you know that expression, disappear in a puff of smoke? Maybe they can make that happen.
Well, they did it to me.
What?
When I was hit in 1997 at 1 o'clock in the morning, sound asleep in my bed, my shoulder was blown up from the inside out with no external damage whatsoever. And it is, in fact, a small microwave type of a weapon. Several people have been killed by it. Normally what that does is a person's hit with it, it will fry your brains and kill you. It'll create a heart attack, cardiac arrest, or convulsions that can be maintained as long as the weapon is aimed at the person until your heart explodes. And that's an old weapon, by the way. An old weapon.
Really? How old?
Well, the original concept, going back to Tesla.
Right.
It was his original designs, and by the way, I have pictures and videos of all of this and all these weapons. We actually experimented with one disgusting weapon when we went when George Bush went into Noriega's Panama, and I have actual live footage of it. They experimented on a whole bunch of new weapons during that time. But I say it's new, hadn't been used too much on the battlefield, and melted human beings down, turned human beings, civilians, in the streets of Panama into what looked like used chewing gum. And I have that live on videotape. Anyhow, so when you talk about weapons, the weaponry is so highly developed at this point, you don't want to know. You do not want to know how highly completed weapons are, including a particle beam that was the big death ray, quote-unquote, that Tesla was working on when he died. Well, he had the paperwork finished on it when he died, and they grabbed it all up out of his bedroom when they found him dead, went into a safe and took it all out. The particle beam is a finished weapon at this time that will literally turn, let's say, a steel structure into dust particles. And that's what that beam does. That's what the particle beam weapon is. And they've been fooling around with that for, God knows, 40 years. And they've got it. They do have that as a completed weapon as we speak. I'm talking about something scary. They literally could fly. They can fly a satellite or an aircraft over a given building and hit it with that for a given period of time and turn the building into dust.
Bob.
Okay.
Now, I'm with you on this stuff. You know, a lot of people are going to go, wow, are you kidding
me?
But it makes you wonder, is that what happened to the Twin Towers up there?
Well, that is part of what happened to the Twin Towers. And I don't want to get into that. That's another whole, again, situation unto itself.
Yeah, we don't want to burn everybody out on that, if you'll excuse the expression.
But the bottom line is, if I'm saying it, I can prove it. Okay, so that's, let me just put it that way. And most of these things are in one of the 10 different DVDs that I have available on my website. Many of these things were actually reports done for the Senate or the Congress. Somebody that at one point in time said, hey, we're looking into this and that. Is this real or is this baloney? And I either had said to him, well, that case I think is baloney. But on this other case that you've asked me about, I'll send you the pictures and I'll send you pictures, videos, and the documentation on it. This stuff is all real. And when you see people like the fellow that died a couple years ago that had run Skunk Works for years, the organization that built most of our spacecraft and all that kind of stuff and top secret weapons and all, he said, on his deathbed, he said, we have already been flying out and amongst the stars for years, and it has nothing to do with any of the energy that anybody is aware of in the general public. And it's so top secret, inside of secret, that it'll never probably come out to the general public. And he says, we've been doing that for years. We're way past going to the moon. And that was the guy that, I think his name was Bell, that was running Skunk Works for years and years. You know, it's an old guy. He was dying. He wasn't making up stories, that's for sure. And the documentation is around and out and about in areas for an awful lot of this stuff.
So, but, Bob, when people study the kings, the old Egyptian pharaohs and all that stuff, it's almost as though the people are like, we're in awe of our pharaoh. And but the pharaoh is wise to a lot of things that lie beyond Earth's atmosphere. I mean, this may sound a little simplistic, but it sounds like it's the same situation, same as it ever was. The people, with quotes around it, we the people, we don't get to know what the kings and princes and princesses and so forth get to know about what's really going on. We're never going to know. We may look back on it centuries from now and say, well, back in the early part of the second millennium, this and that happened, but we're not going to find out about it until it's already a done deal, and we've either been victimized by it or we're utilizing the technology and don't even know where it came from.
That's right, absolutely. And, and you know, in a lot of cases, if you just apply general logic and common sense, I mean, if you have to see the real stuff, you know, you have to see a picture, see a photo, or see photos aren't great anymore, but see actual films and things of that sort, and see the weapons and see them fired and blow things into Never Never Land and stuff like that, without any noise, you know, and in 0.2 seconds. We have lasers now mounted on our ships that in a couple of seconds, it'll totally blow a satellite into non-usable junk in that high orbit that it happens to be in. There's just so many things that the general public, again, and you're not going to know it. And if when you look at it, anybody that thinks that we went in 100 years or 85 years from still having horse buggies delivering milk in New York City to walking on the moon, if you think we did that without assistance externally from other technology, you're in la-la land, you know. I'm sorry, but, you know, anybody that genuinely thinks that we did it just because we had some smart guys that we stole from Hitler, those were the guys who did all of our... all the engineering, obviously, on our equipment, et cetera. But let me know, John, when you want to start heading in towards finding out about what's headed our way and how I discovered it.
Bob, I was we are sort of headed that way, because my next question to you is, we're not really dealing with the guys and girls that we know of. The ones that are corrupted and they're running amok all over the planet, just buying and selling things and making lots of money. I'm thinking that in the same way that our technology was provided to us by, and I'll just say it, off-planet agents, I'm thinking that off-planet agents are also running things down here. Is that too much of a stretch?
Well, they certainly are, or they are directing and controlling the people that are, one generation away from, two generations away from us. But I would say absolutely. But what has happened, you know, for years, an awful big part of my inquiries and investigations, et cetera, over the last 30 years had been the realization that there was this small group of secret government aiming us towards world government or singular control of the entire globe. And they set out very specifically, they've written about it, of what the plan was, and et cetera, et cetera. The biggest expose on that was back in the 70s, 67, in a book called Iron Mountain, the Report from Iron Mountain.
Yeah.
And in that report, which was actually a synopsis of a 6,000-page report done for the United States government by outside think tanks on how and what was necessary to put the United States of America under and into a one-world single government. And it was requested by the Kennedy administration, was not finished and completed until Johnson had participated in the elimination of Kennedy and was now sitting in the White House himself. When he received the report, he said this will be classified secret for 50 years or 100 years. You're never going to have this released. And what happened was somebody who participated in it did a synopsis and released it and published it in 76. And amazingly, what it said was one thing that we have to do, of course, would be, or anything we do to replace war, if we no longer are going to have a war between Russia and the United States under a big, happy, single world government, we still have to maintain armies. And to maintain armies, we have to have a reason. So they said, well, one reason would be, a good idea would be to come up with a thing that we'll call world terrorism. And we can create these terrorists that can carry out threats on the lives of American people from some unknown, they wouldn't have a country. So we wouldn't have to fight a country, but we would still have to maintain an army, even though we were no longer going to fight Russia and the Chinese when and if we moved into world government. And they also said, if we start now, in 30 years, if we change some regulations of industry, we can probably convince the people that the world is being polluted so bad that it's a threat to our existence and our future. And if we start today in the 60s, in 30 years, we will probably be able to convince the people that that's the truth and that they're going to die from pollution and all. So that would give us a lot of bureaucratic control. All right? These things were printed in black and white by our own government as a plan for world government in the 60s. And there's about eight other... Oh, by the way, another one in there. It says we have to make sure that we can create weather control by our scientists. We have to come up with weather control also. And we have to come up with a single bank, a single world bank with a single currency, and we have to merge. And, of course, the Europeans have already had done that a while back, going into the European Union and all of that.
Yeah.
These things, there's about 9 or 10 of these written in black and white in this expose that was done, this internal release of the information, and printed in 76, and was called the Report from Iron Mountain, period. Now, I found out about that in 1994. And once I discovered that, then I realized the reality that they were actually pursuing, to George Bush's quote-unquote, a new world order.
Yeah.
A new world order. And that is a reality, and it's not some conspiracy nut situation, because it was imprinted in black and white in the 60s. Okay, so from that was, that was a backbone for many of my concerns and my investigations with the drugs and all the rest of that, and the altering, you know, carrying out terrorist events, like written in the book there, all right, carrying out terrorist events, not by countries, but by strange terrorists, and, comma, now it becomes necessary to give up your weapons and go under the control of a thing that was called Homeland Security, period. That was the creation of it, and the plan literally goes back to the 60s. And when you see that and you know that and you understand it, you will never laugh at a person that talks about new world government, one world government, new world order, or any of that. It's absolutely a reality. Now, that was what brought me 3 years ago to chasing this giant amounts of money, including the gold all gone. And also the fact that we had changed in 1983, that was approximately a very important year. There was a change in our space activity. There was a change that they were, theoretically, Ronald Reagan was going to create what they called Star Wars protection.
Oh, yeah.
It was not that. It was not that, because I found out all of those new satellites and things, telescopes that were launched, and sensing devices that were launched and put out theoretically to be watching Russia and China, they were all faced outwards. They were faced towards outer space. They weren't faced towards Russia and China. We always had a couple watching that, but that's not where this was going. And what had happened I started, like I said, looking into the money thing, and I couldn't imagine. They changed direction. They slowed down with this world government junk. They also have not spent a penny fixing up anything in our infrastructure in the United States of America.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I say they haven't spent a penny, they spent a penny, but they didn't do very much. They've not done anything. Every bridge, every tunnel, every generator, everything that falls under the infrastructure of America is about in the condition to be condemned. We have 2 million cars go over the bridge into New York every day, and that bridge should be shut down a month ago. That bridge is too hazardous to carry vehicles. And that's all over the United States. Thousands of bridges and tunnels and electric generators and what have you are no good, folks. They built these in 56. They built them in 46. All right? So you have to say, wow, wait a minute. I thought they were fixing that stuff every once in a while. No.
Sure.
They haven't even gone around and done good inspections on that. So you have that money that should have gone there is gone someplace else. You had money out of huge amounts of money vanishing, fraudulently moved from one thing to another, from weapons developments. They do a few things on the left hand, but they take 80% of the money and it's going someplace else. And I figured out what it was, and that's 100 underground facilities in the United States of America, 103 of them. They are huge. They are highways under the ground. There are railroad trains that are mag-levitated at the speed of sound, 500-mile-an-hour levitated magnetic trains underground.
Magneto-leviton again.
Right, and connected, interfacing and connecting between different locations. They are gigantic. They have taken the NORAD facility and altered it to be, they took all the stuff out of the NORAD facility at Cheyenne Mountain that's been there for 50 years and took everything out, rejuvenated the interior, and turned it into a giant underground survival facility. They have moved all of the electronics to Peterson's Air Force Base, and I don't think it makes any difference, but it's there anyhow. I found out that the Russians in 2010 put out a mandate that within 2013 there would be 5,000 underground facilities for the general public that would be survival facilities. They accomplished that in 3 years. These are not big facilities, each one of them, but they do have a couple of big ones, including one that will accommodate 50,000 people inside the inside a mountain in Russia. The Red Chinese, without saying much, had converted several of the 2,000 or more tunnels that had already existed in China going back as far as 1,000 years when they fought many of their wars amongst each other out of the tunnels in the sides of mountains. They have done two things. They've gone into many of those and finished them off into modern facilities. They have dug and created brand new modern facilities in Red China. And they are just as good as, if not better than, the ones in America. They are huge, entire small cities underground, and likewise in the United States, the same situation. They have filled them, and let's go with the United States. In America here, they have been shipping tons and tons and tons of survival dried foods and materials for long-term underground hideouts for these, for the people that are going to be allowed in there. And they have been filling them today. And what I mean by today is they have been filling them with, actually for the last 10 years, with a target date very close to trying to have it done, let's say 6 months ago, having them filled completely and ready for use in right now. They're not doing it for 10 years away. They're not doing it for 50 years away. They're doing it so that if they need it next month, they're ready. And for the most part, they are. They have some of these facilities include a huge area that's nothing but for growing plants and foodstuffs underground in several of the facilities. So they're not talking about going under for 30 days. The foods that have been delivered in there, dried foods, which, by the way, for the last 5 years, they've occupied probably 70% of the food production out of the survival food operations in the United States has been going to the government to fill these facilities.
Let me ask you this, Bob. Do you reckon that this underground construction is what's causing all of these booms in the middle of the night and these earthquakes and such? Is that your opinion, that's what's doing it?
Yes, sir. That is exactly. And what's interesting about that is that some people, in some cases where people are hearing these tremors and explosions and all this kind of thing underground, and then they come back and they say, gee, we can't find anything. We don't understand it. Now, in some of them, they literally have underground facilities right there that they are, in fact, still drilling, and that's why they're hearing it. In some cases, and they're secret. So they're not going to come out and see it in the news and say, oh, don't worry about it. It's just the government drilling another giant hole under Boston, Massachusetts. Okay? They're not going to do that, obviously. Although I will say this, I have a list of all 100 of these operations of where they are, and that's on my website as well. But the some of these now, this is interesting, because some of where they're hearing these, they're saying, well, gee, it sounds like a short earthquake, you know, rumbling, and sometimes they're hearing just a big boom kind of a situation, and maybe with a little bit of tremor along with it, and nobody knows what it is. Some of these are being audibly transmitted through the tunnels from another state, could be 150, 200 miles away, and through the tunnel underground. Let's say in Tennessee, let's say they're doing some digging, expanding or work or explosions and stuff, and it's traveling, the audio thing is traveling through the tunnel to another city in another state altogether, and they're hearing it, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like feeling your pulse. You're not listening to your heart, but if you feel it in your, listen to it in your wrist, you're going to get the same thing, and that's what it is. It's traveling. Same as going through our blood vessels in your body, the sound is traveling through these underground facility tunnels, the highways. And by the way, in my new DVD, which covers all of this that I'm talking about from this point forward, and looking for the money, et cetera, all of this is in the new DVD, which is called Nibiru Planet X or Nibiru Incoming. The title is actually Incoming Nibiru, and that's the title of the DVD. It is a four-hour double-disc DVD, shows all of the interfacing, where the money went, what it's going, and what's coming our way to cause it. So when I found out, first off, I found out about underground facilities in the 90s, and I had guys who were sending me pictures and some videos back then. It was videotapes, sending me videos and snapshots and what have you. And I was so wrapped up with chasing the CIA and the drugs and corruption up to the highest level that I really didn't have the ability. I just had to put it on the side, and I just forgot about it. It was on the back shelf. And in 95, when they finished the Denver airport, I had the ability to go down with someone else, and I snuck in and took pictures underground in the Denver airport. The Denver airport is another one of these underground hideaway survival facilities. It's only one, and they're still working on the airport, folks. It was finished in 95, theoretically. They never stopped working on it. They're working on it today as we speak, and they're still expanding what is the underground part to it, and it is what it is. It's another one of the large operations. What happened about, again, 3 years ago, I was just looking for the money. You know, like, where could it go? You can't. Manuel Noriega, as a drug smuggler and a former dictator, he couldn't money launder $1 trillion. There's no way to, quote-unquote, money launder $1 trillion. You can't zip it into five banks, and there was still too much money. So, again, my concern was if the gold is gone, trillions disappearing for 10, 20 years, et cetera, et cetera. There's where it's gone. It's been going into these underground facilities. The next question is, what is, and by the way, the Red Chinese, there, and I have photos and live footage of these facilities in my new DVD. Okay, now, get back to Red China. Red China, and I have pictures of their stuff, too. Red China literally has 3,000 nuclear weapons in some of their underground facilities. They have battleships. This is mind-boggling. Now, we're not talking a little rat hole here. They have battleships and aircraft stored in underground facilities in China. And again, I have photographs of all of this stuff.
Well, they got a lot of cheap labor over there. Why not?
Well, but they don't need cheap labor. They're not using cheap labor. You know, the cheap labor is what makes your refrigerator and your microwave and your TV that you get.
Well, who builds the bases?
No, this stuff, now these, and by the way, I have pictures of all of what I'm about to tell you about. We have singular drills that can travel at about 7 miles an hour into the side of a mountain and come back out one time in, one time back out, and you can drive an 18-wheeler where the drill went in there. The one in China that I have pictures of makes our stuff look like we're just getting started. They have that same drill that is so large that you can drive an 18-wheeler into the hole that it just made 20 minutes ago. Well, actually not, but it takes a couple of days, okay? But the drill that would drill that hole big enough for an 18-wheeler, the Chinese have one on the left, one on the right, and one in the middle, all functioning simultaneously, three of them at a time. And the one in the middle is at least 1.5 times as big as the two giant ones on each side. And it's a single mechanism with three gigantic drills that they are utilizing in China. It completely cuts drilling time and the time to have a finished product where you can drive vehicles in and out of. It cuts it probably in a half of the time that it would take us. But we've been doing them for 20 years, so we have all we need, actually. All right? Now, the question was, what in the world is it that has changed the entire direction of thievery in the United States at the highest levels of our corrupted government, and the Chinese and the Russians? And by the way, the European nations are doing it also. What in the world would cause them to go take all of the money that they could possibly push into their pockets and take it down into making these giant hideouts? And somebody came to me and said, what do you know about Nibiru, the Planet X, called the Planet X? What do you know about it? I said, you know, well, I don't know. It sounds like science fiction crap to me.
Doesn't it?
Sounds like it's you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. We need the background music for that stuff. And I said, that's what it sounds like. And they said, well, you haven't studied it. You don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, okay, what are we talking about? So I was turned by several very high-level intelligent people, a couple of scientists and blah, blah, blah. And they said, here's what you got to look at this, you got to look up this, you got to look up this, you got to look up the history and contact this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy that's been doing this for 35 years, and you're going to be really surprised. So I did that, and the bottom line is Nibiru, which is a 10th planet, that's why the idea of planet X, if you will, okay, That X actually is Roman numeral for 10. It is the 10th planet. It's called Nibiru. It's called the Destroyer. It's called the Visiting Star. The Chinese call it the Flying Dragon Visiting Star. And what I discovered is that the few people, groups, and organizations that have seriously investigated this have totally convinced me that is what the problem is. That is what was discovered, and the information delivered to Ronald Reagan about 1983, a couple of years before in 85 was when I got into looking at corruption. All right, so he was in there and in 1980, and in 83, the information came from the scientific community, that Houston, we have a problem. And the problem being that Planet X is real, and Planet X is on its way back in a huge elliptical orbit. It is headed back in towards Earth, and it will be here in X period of years. During that time, that was when all of a sudden things changed. We're no longer doing certain things with the Space Administration, with NASA. They changed things all around. They cut budgets. They changed, shifted money around. They started doing that artificial Star Wars thing, which again was not Star Wars looking out. I mean, looking inward, it was Star Wars watching outward. And they started launching infrared telescopes. The Vatican came to Arizona and cut a deal with the president. And the Vatican themselves put in an infrared telescope in Arizona. An infrared telescope in Arizona,
yeah,
looking outward,
yeah,
toward Nibiru. It's called Lucifer. That's their title for it.
Yeah, nice.
Which I thought was a little interesting.
All right, now, Bob, hold your place right there, my brother, and let us resume here in just a little bit. Bob Fletcher, you are one rockin' cat. I had no idea I was walking into this one when we got together, but I'm delighted that it's turning out the way that it is. You're an amazing guy. Check out Bob's website, BobFletcherInvestigations.com, and let's find out about the Destroyer being observed by Lucifer. As we go forward across the desert of vacuous content and opinion to the oasis of rational thought.
Language,
maybe even a back door for some of us.
I
hope so. This is Caravan to Midnight. We shall return. Be patient.
But we need to differentiate between two sorts of things.
All right, we have returned to listen to the most singular commentary and speeches of our guest, Bob Fletcher. BobFletcherInvestigations.com. And, as the Caravanners know, there's a link from the show posting on caravantomidnight.com to his site. And he gets, he's getting lots of attention on this worldwide. Worldwide. I'm using the word worldwide because people know this is not Bravo Sierra, folks. They do. And you know it too. So thank you very much for supporting us and for supporting Bob and all of the investigators and researchers who are trying to bring, and in fact are bringing, the truth to you. Have I said this before? You're not going to get this from mainstream media. I think I have, so why say it again? Oops, I already did. All right, Bob, let's keep going, shall we? This about Nibiru.
All right. Well, so like I say, I finally figured out where all this outrageous money would go. They're into underground facilities. Then I found out to my surprise was that it's not just the United States, but it literally is worldwide. Then the final opening of the door, when several people said they're worried about the return of Nibiru, which is called Planet X. A lot of people have made fun of it for a long time. But then I found out that in the 90s, where one fella who was an early person discovering this was named Zachariah Sitchin, and he had studied many years ago, had deciphered all of these Sumerian clay tablets, which there literally were tens of thousands of these clay tablets discovered 6,000 to 7,000 years old. And Dr. Sitchin had deciphered them, spent his entire last 30 years of his life, I guess, studying these and deciphering. And basically, they were like a giant diary, and they were discovered, as a matter of fact, in what would have been was a totally buried library of the Sumerian nation's information buried under the sands in which is now would be called Iraq, the Iraqi area in the globe where Sumeria used to exist. And they had these tens of thousands of clay tablets that were like a diary or like the Encyclopedia Britannica, but they were 7,000, 6,000 years old. And when he went over them, the bottom line was it described this new Nibiru visiting planet that came in, swiped around the sun, and then went back out, and that it was on this 3,600-year orbit. Now, I'm not an astronomer. I've kind of become an early student or a late student on this, I guess. And so I know much more than I did. But to me, I thought, wow, 3,600-year orbit, well, that's pretty goofy. You know, this thing supposedly goes out and comes back in 3,600 years and goes away for, 1,800 years out and then comes back again. I thought, well, that was extraordinary. But then I found out that a comet that was labeled Hale-Bopp Comet came around in 1997. We never knew that it existed. It did come in. They saw it. It came around. They measured it and did all of their stuff that they do astronomically on this thing. And they found out and stated that this is on a 4,200-year orbit. So it will not be back again for 4,200 years. Actually, 97 was when it came around. Came in, came around the sun, went back out, just like they all do. Now, Nibiru is not a comet. It is a physical planet. It is described likely to be five times the size of Earth. So it's pretty big. And it drags along with it four or five moons of its own, similar to Earth with its moon, and a long tail. Gosh, only knows how long the tail on this thing would be, because to my surprise, Halley's Comet, which comes around in 75-year cycle, has a 24-million-mile tail of junk debris behind it. Big difference is that what's dragging behind Nibiru is not going to be pieces of frozen ice and dirt and small debris like that of Halley's Comet. What it drags behind it is meteorites, pieces of junk that's the size of school buses is the concern. So we're talking large pieces of serious solid mass and not frozen pieces of ice particles and dirt. Now, I did more inquiry I wanted to get a good, broad perspective of this thing to make sure that I wasn't really barking up a tree that didn't even exist. And I found out that we had internationally, cooperatively, in 2006, created what is called the International Seed Vault. The Seed Vault, which is located in a Norway area, it's actually like on an island, so to speak, in Norway, cut into the frozen side of a mountain. It holds every seed of every known living growth from the face of the earth. And the intention is that there are multi-millions of the seeds. The intention is that they will have seeds to replant when all of the growing things of the earth have been destroyed and wiped out. Now, since finding that myself, and locating the information on that, which had been out there for a few years, I, just like everybody else, didn't know about it. It's under my nose, so to speak. The Bill Gates family had put a lot of money, donated a lot of money into this particular location. Now, additionally, I found out there are two more. There's another one in Europe and another one in the United States someplace, and I don't physically have that. But it's enough to say that there actually are two more. So there are three of these locations to go along with the all the underground facilities. All right, so I went again. Now at this point in time, I was pretty much satisfied of what was going on, and I needed to have kind of put a handle on this planet, the Planet X, and what it could do. Now the best studies. Oh, and by the way, I have to get back to Dr. Sitchin. Sitchin, so he did the he had done the discovery of this and finding these clay tablets that physically describe this event and all the rest of the living conditions of the 6,000-7,000 years ago. It's amazing what kind of a diary is that to find and have the ability to go over it. It describes that this was apparently what created Noah's floods when the Noah flood came around. Additionally, it affected the Earth such that it tilted it 26 degrees on its axis for the period of time it swung close by. Now, as we all know, the moon, as a matter of fact, is what causes our tides every day, in and out, the moon and the sun kind of dragging in and out, left and right, back and forth, so to speak. And that's our little moon. Now, with something the size of five times the size of the Earth and a rather a solid mass, the gravitational effect on our waters is going to be what literally did take place during Noah's time, and that was to drag the oceans literally out of their seabeds. And the people that had done the best research on this had gone and studied the Chinese reporting of this thing, and they did find it. Which was also very exact. They also found things like the Tibetan monks on the top of the mountainside. They had written it, had their scribes had written the information in when this passed. So this is not a joke. And what happened when Dr. Sitchin, of course, was trying to present this, the general science community, because they couldn't see it, they said, oh, get out of here, that's ridiculous. You know, but we have to realize that 6,000 years ago, the Sumerians were not writing a hoax. They were just describing a thing that had come in and done what it did and how it affected the Earth and then went back out again. This is not something, you know, that they didn't have the internet where people were pulling great little jokes on each other. People didn't do that back then. The Orientals that were the astronomers for the emperor a couple thousand years ago, when they made even a mistake, the emperor had their heads cut off. So it wasn't anybody doing any jokes out there. These are not pretend writings on clay tablets from 6,000 years ago. So when the serious study was done, lo and behold, they found out it fit everything described in the Bible, not only in Revelations, but also talking about a thing called wormwood. And then, of course, you have all of every other nation of the world a couple thousand years ago, if they were scribing anything, it was described, okay? In other words, it's written in this multitude. It's in the Bible. It's in the Quran. It's in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, for crying out loud. They even refer to it. All right. So now, where is it in that? And where is it now? The consensus is that it's on its way back in. Now, it's not easily seen. It's way, way still far away from us at this time. It does not have its own power. And what I mean by that, it doesn't have its own transmission of light like the sun. So it has to be seen by infrared telescopes. And this is where we spoke earlier about, interestingly enough, not only have we sent infrared scopes out on satellites, if you will, as far out as we could, and some of them still going, but it must be seen now properly with an infrared scope. And the Vatican, as I mentioned earlier, has built an infrared scope. They call it Lucifer, and it is located in Arizona. Now, obviously, these simplistic things you can look up yourself and find it.
Sure.
But what's taken place lately in the last few years, a lot of things, and people, the scientific community, for example, what's going on with our weather? The weather is the craziest it's ever been in 1,000 years. The sun has been acting up, developing holes on the face of the sun that has not happened previously.
Well, let me ask this, Bob. Are we thinking that maybe distributing carbon taxes is not going to it's not going to improve our weather any?
I'm afraid with Nibiru coming in, we shouldn't worry too much about the weather anymore anyhow.
Okay.
But because that's going to end up doing its own thing, which it has already started. The glaciers, unless you, again, if you don't study it in particular, find out about it, you're not going to hear it anyplace. The glaciers are melting, and they're reporting back rather quietly, so to speak. But the glaciers are melting from underneath, not on the top, but underneath the glacier body themselves. And it's raising the water level today as we speak. It is already raising the water in Miami Beach during high tide every day, so high that they have had to spend multi-millions of dollars for pumps to switch on every afternoon during high tide in Miami Beach because the water is coming 5 to 6 blocks into the city. That's happening today. They're saying, gee, we don't know for sure. We didn't think it was going to melt so quick, and we're not sure, and we got to stop driving our cars so much. I mean, that's garbage. The bottom line is I found out that all of the planets in our solar system, starting out with Pluto, have been increasing in their surface temperatures. They are changing in their content of gas. The gases are varying. They are having storms on the face of many of the planets in the solar system. All of the astronomers working, quote-unquote, under government control and oversight are coming back and simply saying, gee, we're not sure what it is. There's something that's affecting them, but we don't know what that is out there. There's something that's doing it, and maybe it's just a cycle, and maybe it's this, and maybe it's that. That's baloney, folks. And the people, you know, we have to remember something. A lot of people say to me, well, wouldn't NASA be able to see this and know and talk about it and everything? Well, the answer to that is yes and yes and no. In other words, yes, they do see it. Yes, they do know all about it. And are they going to talk about it? No. They're not going to say anything about it. And as a matter of fact, also, if you'll think back, in 2009, 10, 11, 12, whatever, remember that millions of dead birds, millions of dead fish, thousands of dolphins and whales that just ran and beached themselves, and the birds fell out of the sky dead, and all of this garbage. It's one of those things where the science came out and just said, we don't know what's going on. A year ago, over in Iceland, the ice, surface ice, which again, I guess we'd have to refer to it as a glacier, in a period of 4 months, not a year or 7 months, but a period of 4 months, the entire glacier covering Iceland was gone. Another thing that people, again, if you don't look into it individually, just wouldn't know about, and that is, as we speak, and over the last year or two, there's been 35 to 45 volcanoes erupting. They are erupting today. Now, I didn't look it up today or anything. I have no idea what it is. But I'm going to guarantee you, without even looking it up, it's going to fall between 26 and 46 volcanoes activated again. They are dribbling over the side, a couple of them shooting a few thousand feet into the air, 5, 6, 8, 10,000 feet, but most of them are at least blowing off bad enough that the Geological Survey have them written on their paperwork and their reports for the day as being active volcanic activity, not just shaking or grumbling or mumbling, but they physically are under active, the registration is being active as we speak. Now, I know 30 days ago there was 46 of them going at one time. You see a little bit, every once in a while, you might catch something on ABC or CNN where they say, oh, and by the way, in Iceland, the volcanoes did this and did that. They had to change some airplane flights, and maybe you'll hear about one in the Philippines or something of that sort. But the truth is they're reactivated and are being affected by something, okay? And it takes something rather seriously in terms of size. Although, what I was rather surprised to find out, the entire solar system is almost like the human body. And that is, even though it's gigantic as it is, that you go out the farthest point out, if you have some activity of some sort, it actually will affect the whole system. So if you slam your hand, your finger in the door, and you swear at the door and jump back and say, oh, wow, boy, that really hurt. It's sent the message to your brain and also to what of the rest of your body. Your finger just got slammed in the door. And that's what's going on cosmetically in the universe right now and actually in our solar system. All right, and everybody says it's something, okay? Now, when James Woolsey, the head of the CIA, quit about a year ago, he came out when he left and he said, the only thing I want to tell everybody about, the likelihood of us in the next year or so having a complete electrical shutdown from electromagnetic impulses. I was talking about he left it rather vague, but he's referring to the EM force that would come from solar flares from the sun acting up. Also, Janet Napolitano, who was in charge of the Homeland Security, within a few months of Mr. Woolsey, she quit, and she also made a parting statement that it's not a matter of if it will happen, but we will have a complete electric shutdown from some electromagnetic force field. Now, these people are not permitted to say anything specific related to the possibility of Nibiru coming back in. They just have been told, keep your mouth shut or you will become one of the people on the list of an unusual death. They are just, and they have been killing people. I'm not going to get into that thing, but they have shut people up that are at a high enough level to be acknowledged and being admitted that they have the ability, the knowledge, et cetera, to be paid attention to. They are eliminating some of those people who can't keep their mouths shut. Now, I'm trying to think of I don't want to get off track too much, but to get back briefly to Dr. Sitchin. Dr. Sitchin, several years ago when he first came out, everybody laughed at him because he had talking about this thing that just, people can't see it, in the modern world. They just think it doesn't exist. And then when it falls on their head, then they say, why didn't somebody tell me about it? But he had a gentleman named Dr. Richard Harrington, and he was in charge of the Naval Observatory for the United States government, for the Navy. And he had read Sitchin's information and the descriptions of what Dr. Sitchin had discovered. And he looked into it himself, and he contacted, in 1991, he contacted Dr. Sitchin. They had a sit-down meeting, which we have a videotape of that meeting, and it's good that we do. But the meeting, Dr. Harrington said, you are absolutely right. I did find Planet X. It is out there. and it is probably five times the size of Earth. I can find it because it's affecting other planetary structures out there, and I absolutely am agreeing with you, and I will, in fact, complete my paper and put it before the Scientific Observatory Sciences, and he died, unfortunately, before he ever got to doing his paper.
Unbelievable.
Not unbelievable, unfortunately, and that's the problem with that.
Well, outrageous, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you know what, what I'm saying. These are things that used to be unbelievable, and now that we have a good handle on it, we realize that, unfortunately, that is what happens. There's a lot of dead people surrounding this site. We lost 12 astronomers together in a single gondola over, I think it was over the Andes or the Alps, at a meeting they were having. They were people that were all studying this, and the cable broke, and all of them fell down in the in this gondola that they run across the top of the Alps, and they were all killed. They had 12 of them or 8 of them at one single time. So people are dying from either talking or too much about it. Most recently was just a couple of months ago with a couple of high-ranking astronomers came out and said they had, in fact, discovered two large planets out past Pluto. Now, whether either one of the two of them are Nibiru or not, we're not sure. However, I would say the fact that they've discovered two considered to be like the size of Jupiter or Neptune, something like that, pretty good size, that in fact they exist. These were only discovered literally within the last 6 months or so. So when we get back to people ask about, and by the way, not only is it written about in every scripture from every corner of the earth and described literally exactly the same, but if anybody believes in Nostradamus, any of his visions, or the visions of people like the English, the old English lady that Mother Shipton, that had done her readings, and she had these visions, if you will, whatever you want to call it, predictions. She did those in the 1400s, and she was English. So that her sightings actually, or her prophecies, were literally written in American English. And in fact, she not only saw Nibiru, but completely again described it the same as it had been described in biblical writings, etc. But there's no interfacing between these people in the 1400s. We didn't have the websites, obviously, and we didn't have any means of interfacing between the other side of the globe, so that for the Tibetan monks to write the same thing that this lady wrote down is pretty freaky. Now, how good she was, she predicted submarines, she predicted people being able to walk under the water, metal battleships, harvester machines, picking out the crops with men riding on top of them, the gold rush of the 1880s in America, and America had not been discovered yet. So she's fairly good at her psychic readings, if you will. I don't know, some people don't believe any of it. I believe that these people had been taken up and visually saw this stuff. Like the people that are grabbed up by UFOs in modern time. And the reason I say that is because Moses and a couple other people in the Bible said that they had been taken up on board a cloud and looked down on the roundness of the earth from afar in the stars and then brought back to earth again. And if that doesn't sound like somebody being taken up in a craft, then I don't know how better you could describe that. But I don't want to get away too far from that. Now, a fella named Ben Rich, who was the man that actually ran, he was the guy that ran ran the Skunk Works for so long. His name was Ben Rich. I think I talked about him earlier. I didn't have his name correct. But Ben Rich is a guy that says, we've been out there with information we had gotten from aliens. As we built our ships on the basis of that, and we've been flying around among the stars for 40 years. And he says that's totally a top secret operation that'll never be released to the public. And he said that on his deathbed. So he's not some kind of a character that may have been just trying to sell a book or something.
Right.
It's long gone and passed off. And people ask about what will happen when, in fact, Nibiru passes close by. Well, unfortunately, if it is the size that everyone says it must be, and again, the dimensions of this is being done with calculations not only from previous historic writings, but also by actual effects and how large of a solid mass body would have to be to interfere or cause an effect on orbits of other planets. And that's, as a matter of fact, they discover and have discovered in the last few years and admitted to looking into a place where there was nothing could be seen at all in outer space. And then when they get the increased infrared satellites out there with telescopes and the big ones on Earth here, when they now have those, they look in the same place that used to be a black nothing void, and they're finding the equivalent of the Milky Way all over, entire groups of planets and all types of things that if you look in the same place without having the proper telescope, you see nothing but a black space. The size is being estimated by its effect on other planets, etc. Also, by the descriptions, it has been described as when it came by the last time that it had blocked the sun off for several hours, a couple of hours. I'm telling you, I think it was 3 hours, as opposed to the regular moon eclipse, which is only about a 15 or a 7 minute kind of an eclipse. This thing took a couple of hours, and this is where they describe the stars disappearing from the sky and being bombarded by pieces of flame, that the stars fell from the sky and being bombarded with flaming ice and all of that type of thing in the biblical descriptions. The idea, what we are looking at when it comes in, if it comes in, and I would hope that I am wrong. I hope that that, and again, it's not myself. I am the messenger. But I hope all these people that have been studying this all this time, that they're all wrong, and that history books are wrong, and that the biblical description is wrong, and that the Book of the Dead is wrong, and they all describe the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of people are hoping the Bible's wrong.
Right, okay, and I would love to get back with you guys in a year and a half, and you can say, well, you're the biggest idiot we ever talked to. You are crazier than a loony bug, and what other crazy stories do you have?
I don't think that's going to happen, Bob.
Well, you have to bear in mind one thing. I would not have touched this story with a 50-foot pole until I really saw the physical reality. There is no reason for them to worldwide be prepared for a global disaster of the magnitude that they are obviously preparing for and digging these holes underground that are so gigantic. Nobody can come up with a good reason. And the good reason is when these folks contacted me and said, it's Nibiru. Okay. Now, people have also people, particularly the Catholics, will be familiar with the story of Fatima, where there was the three children that had this apparition seen before them. I think it was in Portugal. It's like 1907 or something like that, 1917, something like that, and that there were secrets that the Pope was keeping. And someone contacted me that's been studying this Fatima thing for a long time, and he says the last message that the Pope knows about and is keeping secret, in fact, is the fact that Nibiru will be coming back around. Unfortunately, it really does fit in, so, he may be absolutely correct. Now, what else is going on? The limited number of the elite are stolen all of our money and put it down underground in hideouts for themselves. If there's anybody out there that has an invitation, please contact me, because I don't think any of us in the general public are going to be invited down underground when the stuff hits the fan. Now, are they or when are they going to tell us about it? This is what everybody says. How is the government going to tell us, and when will they tell us? That is not going to happen, folks. They are never going to admit in advance that this thing's coming in. All right? Now, according to the people that are on track studying this thing and have unbelievable amount of documentation that blows your mind, when you really get into it, they are saying that it will be seen first time in the sky in December when it comes back. It will be seen as a new star in the month of December, and it will slowly get larger and more visible on, obviously, coming in towards the sun. It will be seen larger and larger, day by day, actually, week by week. And by March or April will be the period of time that would pass closest to the Earth, causing our serious grief. Although the grief really will start by the time it's even heading in the size of a star, all right? Externally, it will start really causing problems in terms of just its entering close by, all right, using that terminology. See, we have to remember something that I've forgotten until I really got back into this. Unless you're a study astronomy, the solar system and the sun and the distances between them and all of that is so gigantic, it's hard to imagine. If you take a picture of the sun today and look at it, let's say it's the size of a dish, a pie plate. If you go with a ballpoint pen on the side of that pie plate and make a single dot, that would be about the size of the Earth to an 8 or 9 inch pie plate, a single dot compared to the sun. So the sizes of galactic measurement, et cetera, is just mind-boggling, unless you happen to be, I guess, into it all the time, then that wouldn't surprise you. Now, get back to the Uncle Sam telling us they cannot give an advance notice. So what are they going to do? Now, they have to, from their perspective, they have to, at the right time, notify their people to show up wherever they're supposed to be and shuttle them underground and close the doors behind them. And by the way, I have live footage on my DVDs on the Nibiru planet. I have live footage of these underground facilities. I have live footage of the doors, the facilities themselves, descriptions of how even the United States Army describes one of their locations, which is called Location R. It's Ravenwood, called Ravenwood. That particular location will handle about 8,000 to 10,000 people for a long period of time, has everything necessary. Again, I mentioned previously the NORAD facility, Cheyenne Mountain, that can handle a lot of people. They are constructed such that if an atomic bomb goes off on the surface above it, it will not affect what's down underneath. It'll strictly cause it to rock and roll a little bit on the shock absorbers, and the generator systems will probably keep running. So that's how big they are and how they are designed. So we get back to Uncle Sam, keeping it a secret. What they're going to have to do when it comes close enough to where people are going to start reporting, seeing it by amateur astronomers, when they get close to that time, Uncle Sam is going to declare martial law. Now, they will not declare martial law as it relates to Nibiru. They will have a selection of either, number one, radical international terrorists. Remember, I talked earlier, these were written down as part of the New World Order plan in 76 in the book called The Report from Iron Mountain. They're going to either take terrorists, and we will have five or six, maybe even seven major terrorist events in six or seven states or cities at one time or a short period of time.
Yeah.
That will constitute enough belief in the American people that they will accommodate martial law. Or they will have the sad news that something like Ebola or other things or a combination had broken out profusely, and they will have to do martial law. Or the third one, and probably least likely, is a serious potential threat of Russia and the United States, or Russia and China versus the United States on the border of war, World War III. That could be also interfacing with financial crash of the world, okay, a global financial crash. So you have three or four items under which they will do martial law, never mentioning the fact that in 4, 5, or 6 months down the road, people are going to start seeing and they're going to want to know what's coming in. Martial law will be in effect. We will be under control. And at some given point, the limited elite will gather up, be picked up with helicopters or whatever is necessary, and put on into the underground facilities, and they'll be gone. Any communications after they're down under will be pre-recorded, artificial stuff coming from the president giving us my fellow American speeches about what's going on. But they will be gone underground, and we will be under martial law without ever being told that this planet's going to pass close by. Now, what happens when the planet comes by? A multitude of unbelievable events. Number one, volcanoes and earthquakes will take place due to the gravitational effect pulling on the crust, et cetera, et cetera. It will tilt the Earth 26 degrees, whatever, plus or minus a few. It's not going to make any difference to what it amounts to. That tilting itself will cause radical effects on the crust and on the oceans. The oceans will flood with, like, tsunamis just from the gravitational and the effect of the 26-degree change on its axis. Now, what also, by the way, this took place and is registered and logged in from several different directions in historic script. So the 26 degrees, not something I pulled out of my head. It literally took place 3,600 years ago, when in fact it was actually written and drawn into a thing that was discovered in 1999, I think it was. 1999, it's called the Sky Disk. This is a 12-inch diameter bronze disk highlighted in gold to show the passing of a giant body of Nibiru causing a solar eclipse when they took the, and this is drawn, in other words, it's like a drawing. It's about 12 inches across, but it's actually metal. It's made of bronze. It's like something somebody would sketch on a big round piece of paper, but it's a metal. It indicates, it has the galaxy, or excuse me, the constellations drawn in as well in gold on the face of it. So by taking modern day computer programming that we have for in the astronomical arena, you can zero in on the exact day that this was created. Right? They can run it in and the stars and the constellations being there and this position and that position, et cetera, et cetera. They can tell you what day it was. Now, this was discovered in Germany, but it actually showed one of the galaxies that should not, one of the constellations that should not be seen. And when they calculated it, they realized that what had happened was from the German viewpoint where this thing was created, it was done 3,600 years ago at 8:30 in the morning, and that in fact the constellation that was showing should have been seen only in Egypt. And when they figured it out, it meant that there had been a 26 degree shift of the planet on its axis that morning. All right.
Only this 23 degrees. That's quite a lot.
Right, which is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
When you stop and think about, well, the unbelievable thing is that we have it and we have the ability to zero in exactly when they saw this thing, okay? That's where the 26 degree. Now, what the people that had done the serious scholastic research on this, and one of them is Gil Broussard, that had done so much study on this, when he went back, he said, oh, okay, now, if that happened at that period of time, have an exact date, let's go look around in all the old scholastic copy of scripture, et cetera, around the globe. It would have had an effect on that same morning for everybody if the globe had actually shifted.
You would
think. What they did was, did all the research, and lo and behold, they found out the entire globe had, in fact, been affected on that day, and with combinations of earthquakes, volcanoes, floods, everything you could imagine took place on a global point of view on that very morning. So again, this is one of the most amazing pieces of historical documentation that actually had only been found in 1999. I knew nothing about it earlier than that. And I have, again, all of this that I'm talking about now, everything is in the DVD that's available now for everybody to look at themselves.
God.
Now, I'm going to shut up, and if you have anything that's jumped into your mind there you want to ask me, if I can answer it, I will, and if I can't, I'll tell you I can't.
Really, you're going to drop that after that, which was the equivalent of about a double six-hour truth college-level courses? Now you're going to ask me if I have some questions. Wow.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to do that to you. But the bottom line is, now, people ask, let me give you the, how much time do we have left all together now?
Oh, we got, we have as much time as you like.
Oh,
but
okay,
certainly,
yeah, right.
Certainly 30 minutes, you know.
Okay, all right, that's good. Cause, and what I've done here, of course, is really skipped over amount of, it took me 3 years to complete the DVDs that we now have available to put this whole picture together. And again, as I said earlier, I wasn't going after Planet X. I mean, that was just absolutely the farthest thing from my mind. I never even thought about that. I thought I was going to find some real neat, sneaky, scurrilous thing where these people are running off with all the money and then pull the plugs and tell us the money's gone, ha-ha, and that would be the end of it. Now, what I did skip, and what is going to be a sad kind of a state of affairs, is that the government, since I've been aware of this since 94, 95, because they started doing it profusely at that time, what I'm about to tell you. And that is that they started supplying military-grade weapons and training to police officers, police stations, sheriffs, sheriff organizations, law enforcement of all sorts of different variety. And they made available to these police groups or sheriffs, they got a hold of them and they said, hey, we can get you surplus weapons for riot control and things of that sort, if you're interested. And they said, and of course, the response was immediately, we can't afford it. Because at the police level and the sheriff department in Omaha, Nebraska, or wherever you're talking about, they don't have the funds for that kind of stuff. So what the Defense Department, or excuse me, Homeland Security, what they told them was, well, we can help you finance it. Well, first off, you get them almost for nothing. You know, we'll help you finance it, et cetera, et cetera. And the police, of course, then they said, well, what are you talking about? And they said, well, troop carriers, armored cars, water riot control cannons, 50 caliber machine guns mounted on troop carriers, hand grenade launchers, hand grenades, gas masks, protective shields, you know, and it's on and on and on. Okay, so they've been putting this into police forces literally since 1994. And like I say, that was when I first saw it. I didn't have obviously didn't have the information I have now. You know, and I didn't have any idea even that would be applied.
Yeah.
So what they've done now, they said also that, and there was a time frame. This is what bothers me also. See, folks, this is really a spooky part of this thing. There's been this time frame. It includes Russia's time frame from 2010. They said, arm new expanded underground protective survival facilities, 5,000 of them. I don't know how close they got, but I understand they did get most of them done. They said they have to be done by the end of 2013 or the beginning of 2014. All right, that was their mandated date for themselves.
Yeah.
Likewise, same kind of dates was when the delivery for the riot control, all of this extraordinary equipment going to the police forces, seemed to fall in about the same time. Additionally, I have physically in my hands some of the requests for the dried foods. And there was recently, as a matter of fact, a follow-up from Homeland Security and FEMA, both of them hand in hand, on a message, a letter sent to several of the freeze-dried dried foods survival companies and asking them how many tons, besides what's already in the underground facilities, how many tons could each one of these places supply in a 24-hour emergency situation? All right? So not only have they already filled them, the underground facilities, but they have they kind of getting out feelers this was about 6 months ago, feelers as to how much and how quick and how many tons could be supplied if they were asked for the day after tomorrow. See? So the timing on all of this is what's kind of spooky. Now, here's what's going to happen. They got the police forces to sign a little paper that says that if in the case of a national emergency in the United States due to terrorism or some unknown event, if martial law is to be initiated or federal control of the police forces transferred to Homeland Security, you must agree that you will, in fact, function as riot control and the enforcing arm in your own community. All right. Well, these guys Yeah, these good old boys are out there with the, wearing the sheriff hats and all that good stuff. Hey, man, you send me a couple of armored cars and get my boys some gas masks and launching capability to throw a hand grenade 100 yards through a glass window someplace. Boy, you get that for us, and we'll be glad to help you out whenever you need us, you know. But they have no idea that they're being set up. And like I said, they're going to be drawn into being located on their backyard street corners, controlling people under martial law, which, of course, due to the strange weather yesterday and the day before in the New York, Boston, and Philadelphia and Chicago areas up here or on the Northeast Coast, they did a little martial law thing with that temporarily to kind of get a feel of it. Must also say, of course, they did it during after the hurricanes in New Orleans a couple years ago. They did some, and by the way, shot people under martial law in New Orleans. Didn't talk too much about that.
Heard all about it from people who were there.
Right. So yeah, they did. They've done, and they did it even with Ebola. I think it was Connecticut. In fact, it did a martial law for Ebola for a little while. And again, I consider this to be sort of a feeler situation, you know, to see if there, what are the problems, that complaints, what happens, what do people talk about, and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, martial law will be in effect. They will never talk about Nibiru coming in. Now, everybody wants to know when it's going to be here. Now, here's the scary thing, because, you know, the average, including probably every minister, preacher, and what have you on the face of the earth, have no problem talking about these biblical, disastrous, galactic kind of problems that could take place and move us into a quote-unquote, end-time situation. But you'll never hear them talking about it might be in my time. They're always talking, it's always 50, 100, maybe 200 years away. You know, unfortunately, that's been moved away every 100 years, I guess, or every 50 years.
Keeps people in denial, doesn't it? It makes them a little happier.
They rant and rave about it, and it's, you know, and it's going to come down on us and da-da-da-da-da. And then, of course, if you say, well, you know, when is it? Say, well, probably 100 years from now, but nonetheless, you got to get ready. All right. Nobody wants to admit the possibility of this stuff happening in a short, you know, close period of time. The two major groups, and there's a slight bit of conflict between them. One group feels it's a 3,600-year cycle. In terms of its orbit. The other group thinks it may be only a 360-year orbit. In that case, it would have passed 10 times in the last 3,600 years, every 360 years, or 350, give or take a couple of years. So there's kind of a conflict there, and there also is one slight conflict also between the groups that have studied it that I personally have a high regard for. The other conflict is whether it is coming in on our plane of the ecliptic, which I mentioned earlier also, the flat plane that all nine planets are pretty much on, and coming in on that same plane, give or take a few million miles, or if it's coming in at this 30-degree off of the ecliptic, coming in like from the, so to speak, from the bottom up around the sun and then back out. Either one doesn't change when the earliest potential date is, and neither one would change the fact that when it comes close up around to pass behind the sun and then go back out, whether it goes back on the straight plane of ours or if it goes back out on its 30-degree down in towards the basement, so to speak, either one, the Earth will probably pass through the tail two times. So we will go, it will come in and go behind the sun, and right after it has begun its trip behind the sun, our regular orbit will put us through the tail of it. And then we will continue around the sun ourselves, and in 155 days, we would hit the tail of it again where it had exited to go back to outer space. So the possibility is we will go through the tail of this thing twice, using the mathematics of dimensional size that astronomers have calculated on this. It will take us 1 hour to pass through the tail each time. And also, something that a lot of people don't realize is, do you have any idea how fast the Earth travels in its own, on the axis, spinning around on the axis? Most people don't have any idea. It's about 1,000 miles an hour. A lot of people say, how come we don't fly off? Okay, anyhow, it literally is spinning at about 1,000, somewhere between 839 to 1,000 miles an hour. And so we will take 1 hour going through the tail. We will spin, exposing a full, at least, a different 1,000 mile on the face of the Earth. And then we will be out of it. We will go around the sun 155 days. We will pass through that one more time. The problem is this. When we go through it, we have, like I had mentioned, we have solid mass we're going to go through. We will have meteor showers. And we do not have any idea how many of them might be like the one we saw in Russia 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
All right? Now, they may be bigger. It could be the size, God help us, the size of a bus or a tank. That's a serious problem by the time getting through our atmosphere. If it's still that size, that's outrageous. I want everybody to remember the tsunami that hit Japan a couple of years ago. All right, that was a little glitch, literally, just a little glitch of an earthquake, a settling in the middle of the ocean that caused that tsunami. Tsunamis travel, that one, use that as an example because we got to watch that wipe out Japan and a few other areas. They travel at 500 miles an hour.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Seriously.
They start out, if it's like I say, like this one was just a hiccup out there. I don't know, remember off the top of my head what it was. It may have been a 7 earthquake, which would have been bad in Los Angeles, but in the ocean it was a 7 or something like that. It flipped up the water and it comes in at the speed. Now, it starts to get bigger as it gets closer to the shoreline. It's like a wedge. It tends to just get larger and larger. And then we saw what happened by the time it hit the Japanese coast. And it was like, I mean, it was mind-boggling to watch that thing. The possibility exists we would have unknown numbers of tsunami effects from these meteorites that we will be going through, or whatever you want to call them, asteroids or whatever, pieces of space junk of different sizes. Then we will have, again, the shifting of the, potentially this, shifting on the axis, which affects water, and it's going to affect volcanoes. If we have, and by the way, I live fairly close to Yellowstone. I'm a few hundred miles from Yellowstone.
Yeah.
If that one goes, as a matter of fact, if that one goes, it would shut down the growing of plants. It will shut down the growing of plants for about 100 years. That's what it did previously when it blew up, because what it does is shuts off the sun with all of the garbage in the air. As a matter of fact, the town I'm living in here is in Idaho. When the volcano blew off, St. Helens blew off a few years back, I was not here, but the people that I talked to in my little town here in Idaho, they had 6 inches of volcanic dust in this town in Idaho from the Washington volcano.
6 inches so all over everything.
6 inches of soft clay. But it's like cement is what it is. It's kind of like powdered, very light powdered cement. And they had, and we're several hundred miles away. We're in Idaho, for crying out loud. But anyhow, what we're looking at is the reason for the underground facilities. All right.
Now, let me ask you this, Bob. Catch us up on something. Now, how many people altogether, just in this country, let's say just the contiguous 48 states here, how many people do you reckon these underground facilities can hold, or is there any way of knowing?
Well, I should know. I'll be honest with you. A few years ago, I could have found that out, to be very exact. Many of the people of a few years ago that I was very close with are either no longer in government or are deceased, for one reason or another. Some of them legitimate and some of them just old age. But, some of old age and some non-legitimate deaths. But I don't know. I know, surprisingly, they recently finished an expansion in at the Capitol building, and actually in the White House too. They've gone in the backyard of the White House and done quite a bit of excavating, and they have an extra location there. I guess that's on the basis that something might happen quick enough that they actually can't even get the president out of town. That's not likely, but anyhow.
But
they have a, they have a facility under the Capitol building that they just kind of finished, and it's a tourist set up and promoted as, because, you know, you got to remember, they're in there doing all this gigantic construction. People saying, what's going on? You know. So they had built what they call a tourist convention center, and they have tours, and people come down. They come down into the first level down underneath, and they show them slides and do all that neat stuff for tourists. But the third level can hold 3,000 people for a long period of time, and that's right there at the Capitol building. And I got a big kick out of that. I didn't know anything about it until I saw the pictures in the films, et cetera. But you actually can go down right there, and they will hold the supposedly 3,000. They have this place called the Ravenwood I talked about. It's like 8,000 to 12,000 people can be put in there. And these have everything. As a matter of fact, they did a neat thing, and they have one underground in New York City. And they did it on the premise as a protective system for their water in New York City. Now, that was okay. That was pretty good. Somebody came up with a good one on that. But they actually have like little shopping centers and an entire a lake underground, and housing facilities and all kinds of things like that. These are literally cities. And now, by the way, what I didn't mention, and you give me the high sign when we got to fade out of here. What I didn't mention, when I got into the looking for the Chinese underground facilities, and again, like I say, we got photos and motion pictures and things of that also of the Chinese stuff, and they're gigantic, you know, big enough to put several battleships under one location and things of that sort, and whole cities. But the Chinese, about the same period of time, 15, 20 years ago, they started building what's called ghost cities. They have built over 15 entire cities on high elevations in China, and they have put no one in them.
They are
vacant.
Yeah, and the media presents it to us as though, well, they built these cities, but nobody showed up. What's that?
Yeah. Well, they said that it was an economic concept that was an economic screw-up where the Chinese thought they were going to be able to put people in there because they were going to be so so rich. And then apparently that didn't happen. But that's ridiculous because they're still building them, you know. And then that's the problem. And they and I have pictures of all of those in my DVD also, the double DVD disc, the underground or the I believe that these are an intent to, number one, maybe they think they're in a position where they won't be terribly destroyed. Maybe they're rolling the dice on it. I'm sure that many of their underground tunnels and connected underground hideouts are probably either right under those cities and or connected to them. So we have to see what happens if there's any of us to see it. I don't believe we're going to be able to get a good report on that stuff. But you have 15 cities, folks, the size of New York City.
You bet.
With everything, including water power plants, water distribution, the pumping station. I mean, everything. It's a whole city. One of them duplicates Paris, France. And one of them's built in Mongolia, and it is the most exotic thing you would ever lay your eyes on in terms of architectural design. They have whole buildings built in the shape of drinking flasks. The old wine drinking flask from Mongolia that the Mongolian tribesmen had hanging on the side of their saddles. They, they've made a building that looks like one of those. I mean, you know, it's, they spent billions of dollars, and again, nobody can answer the question. And listen, the Chinese are not idiots.
No.
You know?
They plan.
You know, yeah, there's nothing stupid about these people.
No.
And if you think, I mean, they're really stupid if, in fact, they built them and would say, well, gee, the first seven, we don't have anybody to go into. But let's go ahead and build another nine. You know, give me a break, folks. There's very much intent. And I discovered in the midst of my research that a couple of years before they got started on these, they did a major geological study in China as to what direction mountains and lowlands would move if, in fact, there was gigantic geological movement on the face of the earth. And they actually did a giant survey and then started building these mystery cities all around China.
Yeah, real nice cities, and nobody's there yet. No big deal. The Chinese is like, you destroy a city, we got a brand new one over here, we'll move right in, operational, and skip a beat.
Sure. Yeah, but yeah, and you know, again, you have to go back to the fact that, as far as I know last year they were still working on it.
Yeah.
You know, still building them. So, what are they, crazy? No, they're not.
No.
They aren't, folks.
Bob, how do we get your DVD? Just through the link to your site?
Just they're only available through my website.
Okay.
The reason is we have problems with theft and all of that kind of stuff. It's just terrible. And you know, I had somebody, as a matter of fact, said, you know, if this information is so important, Bob, why don't you just give it away free to everybody?
Oh yeah, sure. First That's off, the mantra.
I mean, give me a break. I spent 3 years on it, and by the way, it's $24.95. We pay for the shipping. It's 4 hours, two DVDs. It's the most important $24 you'll ever spend in your life. I'm telling you, you have to get it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and that would be wonderful.
Wouldn't
it? But I think you need to know where your money has gone, and it's Bob Fletcher, investigations.com. And it's very easy. So the very front page tells you about how to go about just getting it. Order it up, and I don't know what to say. It is the most amazing venture that I have been in for the last 3 years on this thing. I spent a ton of time, the money. Oh, and I have to mention this. It probably took an extra year of my time on this because of being hacked by, I have to assume, government people 3,000 times, according to the technician that came in to repair my second totally destroyed, burned up computer. the second one, when he put in my third one, replacing it, he ran a thing and he said, do you know you've been hacked 3,000 times in the last 20 months?
Yeah.
And that, I have to say this, John, this is, that's the most interference I've ever had, and I have done nine other reports, and some of them actually exposing highest level people in our government doing drugs and
underage girls, probably, and underage boys as well. I'm sure there's some of that in there.
Yeah, well, and I never had that much problem. Actually, it literally had. I'm sure I lost a year's work in the middle of the three years doing this thing.
Good grief!
It's crazy. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what. You are a treasure, and let's catch up again real soon. Okay.
That's very good, and as I get more, and by the way, pay attention like to the weather, and pay attention to. I can't do this on a regular basis, but go in, look at the volcanoes and see. Just, you don't have to get excited about it, but see what's going on with volcanoes, see what's going on with earthquakes around the globe, and pay attention to already asteroids and shooting stars and that stuff that's being reported. Let me say one more thing, and then I'm out of here.
Okay.
The Hopi Indians for years and years have had what they call nine signs of their people. They said as these nine different things would take place, and then the last one before the total falling apart of humanity was what they called the coming of the blue star.
Oh, perfect.
All right. On January the 7th, a huge asteroid, I'm not sure how they registered it, was blue and shot across the sky a couple of weeks ago, January 7th.
It's three times the distance from here to the moon. I read it.
Right, you remember that. And it was blue. It was photographed, and it was blue. And I said, son of a gun, nobody had said anything about that. And maybe that's not their blue star, but the Hopi Indians going back 100, 200 years had said when the blue star comes across the sky that would be the last sign you would get before the poop hits the fan, as they say. So God bless everybody. Don't change your life too much. And I'm going to say this because, and I mean this, don't change your life too much at all, because you cannot do anything about this, and nobody can. And if it's coming in as it is described to be, you don't stay at home because you might get hit by a truck tomorrow.
That's right.
Don't do that, and live your life like you're supposed to, and love your family and take care of everybody. But don't go crazy, because if it passes, it's just going to really mess up people in all the corners, and we can't do anything about it, so don't cry about it.
Understood, Bob.
God bless everybody. You take care, John.
God bless you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, Bob is exactly correct, and you know, there's a reference in Scripture that 100, I think if I have this, if I'm close here, I'm not adding to nor taking anything away from Scripture. But I will say this, 144,000 are left after the big culling. Let's not be too sure that 144,000, I know what you're thinking. Oh, the 144,000, that's going to be the elites that are hiding underground. Maybe not. They may be the first to go. After all, the Great One is the one calling the shots. In any case, do as Bob Fletcher says. Live your life. Don't stay in the house because you're afraid of getting hit by a truck. Remember the guy who wouldn't fly airplanes and wound up landing on his house and taking him out? Forget about it. Don't worry about things that are beyond your control. Just exercise caution in your daily affairs. Keep your eyes up always and make ready for what's to come. See you.